The Atlas Hour Podcast, a series by Atlas News Plus. Always unbiased and unfiltered.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Atlas News Podcast. Again, for the fourth time now, I apologize for my squeaky chair. I can't help it. But today, we have a very special guest. We have the Filthy American with us today. And how you doing, man?
Couldn't be better. Get to hop on this podcast with you. And we got some pretty interesting video to watch today, so I'm excited.
Yeah. So what we're going to be doing today, because it's coming up on the two-year anniversary, obviously, January 6th, a lot of buzz recently in the news, especially with the J6 committee. But it's also coming up on, yeah, it's two-year anniversary now?
Yeah, two years. Well,
damn.
Yeah, two. Wait, might be three, actually. No. It is two, because it was in 2021. Start 2021. Yeah.
All right. So, two-year anniversary of January 6th. And the reason why we're doing this podcast is because, Filthy American was there on the ground that day, doing some coverage of it, taking some videos, and we just kind of wanted to reflect on it because it's been like, kind of a crazy 2 years since then. A lot has gone on since then, and it's just something that, we just want to kind of go over because we haven't had the chance to. So I think like the breakdown of this video, we don't really have a script for this, but the breakdown of this video, hopefully if we get it to work, this will be the first podcast with visuals on it. But we're going to run through some clips that he took and just kind of react to them and break them down and just kind of talk about the day in general. Like I said, because, 2 year anniversary is coming up, I have no idea if this is going to be posted on the 6th. Hopefully it is. But if not, that's fine. But I don't really know how we're going to go about this because we're kind of jerry-rigging it because the system that we usually do our podcast through decided not to receive our audio very correctly today. So we are using a different source, and then we're also kind of using a plethora of Google Meet and other random shit. So, I guess to start it off, just explain to me like why you went down there that day. Because for me, honestly, I woke up that day, I knew there'd be a protest, but I did not expect it to turn into what it did. But just kind of run me through why you were down there and kind of what you were expecting going into it.
Yeah. So what happened was it was about 4 or 5 months into, actually less than that. I was about a month and a half into doing my own Instagram page and all that. And I was on Parler, the app that doesn't exist anymore. But I was on Parler just to check on sources and see what was going on in terms of the right wing groups in America. And about starting around mid to late December, it was like all you would see on everybody's feed was like January 6th, gotta pull up and we're gonna take back our country, yada yada yada. And I had never done any work on the ground before as a journalist. I'd only started my own journalism blog type deal a month and a half before January 6th. But regardless, I was out of school, still on Christmas break, and I was like, this thing is talking about January 6th, it might be interesting to go up there and take some photos. What I remember, because a buddy of mine, he heard I was going to go, and he asked if you'd come with me. I was like, yeah, sure, the more the merrier. So I drove about 8 hours or so to D.C. on the 5th, on the night of the 5th. And on the way up there, I was talking to my buddy. I was like, look, man, I think this is either going to be absolutely nothing, where it's just, there's a couple, they just get the speeches and there's some flag waving or whatever, and that's it. Everybody goes home. Or it's going to be actually like pretty monumental. It's going to be pretty severe and they're going to do something crazy. There's not going to be an in between. It's going to be one or the other. We got to the DC, I want to say around 4 or 5 in the morning. So we got there pretty early, parked car in a parking garage. And then we were about a 20-minute walk or so from the White House, which is where they were doing the speeches, where the rally was. Now, dude, when I got there, I got there right after the sun started to come up. Like, so it was super early in the morning, but I got there and there was already probably 7,000-8,000 people. It was already packed towards the front. It was insane. And from the moment I got there until I left DC, until I left that little, not till I left DC, but from the moment I got there until I left where they were giving the speeches, which would have been about 4 hours later or so, I did not see people. I didn't see a stop to the people coming in to like join the crowds. It was just a consistent flow of people coming to the rally part. And so that's when I was like, okay, this is gearing up to be something pretty severe.
Yeah, I couldn't even imagine being there in person, because like it was one of those things where, like you said, like before it started happening, I had the kind of perception that it's like, all right, is this going to be a nothing burger, or is this going to be something, like you said, monumental? And leading up to it, yeah, there was a lot of talk, but you know, as we've seen before with a lot of like viral you know, protests or viral meetups, like sometimes they're hyped up a lot more than they turn out to be. But yeah, I just remember for me waking up in the morning, and that's when like all the speeches were going on, and you know, the crowds were still gathering, and I really was not expecting it to be an eventful day at all. I was expecting to, you know, do like a single post on it. You just essentially highlighting, hey, you know, people are here, this is why they're here and whatnot. But it definitely started ramping up. So when you were there, when did it start getting a little spicy? And like, how did you know it was getting a little spicy? Cause I remember the exact moment when the, switch flipped and it completely changed trajectories.
Yeah. So when I first got the, inkling, like when my spidey journalist senses started going off, I was like, okay, this is actually pretty, this could be like pretty bad. Was about a half hour before Trump got on the stage. Now the crowd's huge, everybody's watching these speeches, already getting pretty rowdy and everything, but where I was standing was way behind. I was actually pretty much right next to the Washington Monument. So I was standing there, and the people around me were essentially most of them were foreign news crews, other journalists. And so I was just talking to them. I was like, you know, where are you guys from? All that, yada, yada, yada. And they eventually told me, they're like, just so you know, they're going down to the Capitol building after the rally's over. I was like, really? So they're already planning to march down there? He's like, yeah. Or the journalist told me, yeah. And I was like, okay, interesting. And then I started kind of looking around, walking through the crowd a little bit. And I started noticing along the edges, especially towards the back, there were a lot of guys wearing like militia like jackets, a lot of wearing jackets, and then you know the jackets had like patches and stuff that like, you know, indicated they were in, you know, whatever different right-wing militia they were a part of. And then I started seeing a couple guys in plate carriers and all that, and I was like, okay, well, this is interesting. So what I decided to do, because keep in mind Trump hadn't come on yet, we'd been standing out there for like 4 hours and it was cold, and I was like, I was getting kind of bored. I was like, you know, I started taking a good bit of photos, you know, I'm gonna take a shot. So I told my friend, I said, all right, if they're marching down to the Capitol, it's about a mile. So it's just basically down the entire length of the National Mall. Not all of it, but from the monument to the Capitol building is probably about a mile. And anyway, I told my friend, I was like, all right, look, I'm gonna head down there before Trump even gets on stage. That way I could hopefully get like a good vantage point to see the first wave of protesters come in, and then, you know, see exactly what happens. That way I'm not on the back end of the crowd just trying to catch up to everybody, right? So as I'm going down there, and Trump hadn't gone up there, I thought I would be the early person, right? There were already people, all of them like militia dudes, there's a couple women as well, but full get up of like, they had plate carriers, helmets, everything. And they were just kind of jogging towards the Capitol building. And I started jogging with them. And I was like, bro, what is going on? This is not all right. This is like, you know, it's definitely escalating like really quickly right now. So anyway, I got to the front gate where the protesters like first overcame the police at the Capitol. I got there, and before the protesters like actually clashed with the cops for the first time, I climbed into a tree and I just started recording. And so that's what I got on video. So like the start of my little compilation of all like the clips I have from that day starts with me in the tree, and you see the protesters coming in and they like overtake the police.
All right, so let's roll it and let's just take a look at what you got.
Yeah, they're breaking through gates.
Yeah, I remember when I was on Twitter and I was seeing videos of the initial police lines in front of the Capitol building, mostly like the bike cops holding up the fences and stuff. When it started getting a little spicy.
Dude, they just got swamped with that first wave of protesters comes in, and they just cops just like it. I mean, it was like I said, they got swamped. They were totally overwhelmed. That first line of police.
Yeah, now they're running on the ground. Now they're just straight up storming it, right? At this point, yeah. I could see them in the grass. Yeah, that's another thing too. Is I remember the moment that they kind of broke the first line. I was watching actually a live stream of it on Twitter, and it was just like a moment just hit, and it was just like everybody just started rushing towards the Capitol building, and that moment I was like, holy shit. What is about to go down? Because like in my mind, it's like, you know, in your head, like looking elsewhere in the world, if somebody storms a government building, it usually never ends very well. And granted, like, you know, I don't think anything like this has happened in ever. So I did not know what was to, like, honestly, like the way I pictured it, I'm like, oh my God, people are just going to start getting gunned down by, like, you know, police or whatever, because like I said, it's like I've never ever even conceived of an incident like this happening.
So that was, I mean I remember being in the moment, I kept on telling myself, especially as it got more and more intense, I just kept on telling myself, just take photos, or like record this, get shots. That's all I told myself. But like, you know, part of me was starting to get like more and more like on the inside. I wasn't trying to like really think about it because I was trying to focus on, you know, getting the best shot and everything. But I was starting to think about it. I was like, dude, what is going on? Like, this is going to be like, it's very historic. This is getting up there. So what happened is, I'll play it again. You can check this out. So you got this Uncle Sam guy right here walking across the grass, right? So right after the protesters broke through with almost... essentially no not police presence, but they broke through with no resistance from the police. The cops then fell back pretty much to the bottom of the stairs of the Capitol, and then that's where they formed their line, and then that's when the clashes really started to get pretty heavy. And then from my understanding, and I was there, but you know, you could only, it's interesting whenever you're actually witnessing something, you do understand a lot more than most people that aren't there, but at the same time your view of it is heavily you're missing a lot of information. So but from my understanding, I was on the right side, right, which the police line there held until the protesters broke through into the Capitol building on the left side, and then at that point they gave up. But at this point right up here, I'll show you, everybody starts hopping the wall. And then after that, you start seeing cops start shooting paintball guns, and they start using tear gas and everything like that. And then they start clashing pretty heavily.
I remember seeing pictures of the cross guy. He was just getting photographed a ton.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so you see that this is when the cops started filing down, and they really tried to reinforce the line. And then, okay, so if you look right here to the left, right, or in the middle now with this frame, yeah, you'll see these dudes. This was one of the craziest things that I saw while I was there was they were sitting on top of this thing. There was this one guy up there on top of this little tower thing with a megaphone. And he was directing the protesters. He was like, "Keep help your brothers out, push, like, all right, go now. And I was like, man, what is going on? This is insane. But yeah, so it keeps going.
Man, it doesn't seem like it doesn't actually now it seems like actually it doesn't really seem like too many people in this shot. Like, did more people come, or is this like, do you think the kind of the main brunt of everything? Because like I said, or like actually like you noted, like being on the ground, your perception was different. From my perception, it was almost like a bird's eye view of what was happening through footage that was being posted and then updates that were being given. But was this like right at the beginning? Because I remember obviously when people broke through, people started filing towards the Capitol building. But like in the timeline, was this like the max amount of people that showed up, or did more people eventually show up?
No, definitely not. I don't, if my timeline's correct, I'm pretty sure Trump was still on stage at this point, or he had just gotten off. So the majority of all the protesters were still down where the speeches were held, at the White House. So they hadn't even walked down yet. So, but that's interesting to note, because that means that anybody that's already come to the Capitol building, with this group in particular, since they're the first ones, they're most likely going to be the more extreme ones or the more violent ones. You know, they were coming here with that objective almost.
It's crazy because there's a lot of people from the footage you played already. There's so many people that I remember seeing in just photographs and footage from that day.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, it's kind of stupid thing, like, oh, the continuity and real world events. Well, yeah, it's like obviously real world events, but it's like crazy to be like, all right, like you are standing right next to people that I remember seeing in photos, like stuff like that too.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of that, I'm looking back on it, I was very, I'm very mad that I didn't get to see the guy with the
the Viking dude.
Yeah, bro. Yeah.
Oh my God. I remember, just a side tangent on that, I remember when photos of him first started coming out, it was like, I remember this guy from like other right-wing rallies in other places around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me like a little bit to try to find him. Cause like, you know, trying to look up like, you know, right-wing Viking man, and you're getting all sorts of weird stuff, but eventually somebody posted his name on Twitter. So I looked him up, and it was funny because, you know, there's a lot of, deflection when it comes to stuff like this. So people are like, oh, he's an Antifa super soldier sort of thing. Dude. And I was like, oh my God. It's like, it was one of those things, because I found some articles about him, because he was largely like a counter protester at like a lot of left wing rallies. So like, you know, there's always like, whenever there's either a right wing or a left wing rally, opposite, you know, wings show up to stir the pot a little. And he was one of them for like, you know, right wing stuff. A lot of the free speech rallies he'd go to. But I just remember being like, oh yeah, like this is the dude I've seen plenty of times. And it was just crazy to think that he kind of became like the face of all this too. But also like, you know, you can't really blame him for being the face of this entire thing, because he's like, you know, this massive, you know, Nordic looking dude with, you know, Viking garb on. But it's one of those things too where it's like, I just remember him just like appearing in the chamber, and it was like, where the hell did this dude come from?
Yeah.
But yeah, that video,
I know where you're talking about, where there's a protester sitting on the floor and he's on the phone, and then the Viking guy comes in, he's like, this guy's a patriot right here. He's like, God bless you, brother. And I'm like, yo, what is this? And there's a cop.
He's like a substitute teacher. He's like, can you guys please move?
He's like, please be respectful, bro. So yeah, exactly. Yo, please be respectful after you just bust it into the United States Capitol.
That's one of the craziest things. So like seeing how like there were like portions of police lines where it was like essentially hand-to-hand combat. And then there's portions of the police line where they're like essentially ushers into a nightclub. And they're like, yeah, just like, you know, don't smash anything.
Yeah, so that was the thing for me. So I was in the police line, they held it pretty long in comparison to the other ones. So the police put up a fight. It wasn't until, from what I could tell, looking back on it, it wasn't until, because I remember getting a text from my friend saying they broke in, because I couldn't get much internet service. So I couldn't really keep up to date, but my friend was texting me updates. And so he said, they're in. That's all he texted. And then about the next four to five minutes after getting that text, the police line, where for the past hour there had just been heavy clashes between protesters and police, the line just dissipated, and they just kind of lost hope and just didn't really care anymore. And there's actually a moment, you'll see it in this video, where the line breaks totally. And then the protesters just rush in. But yeah.
Dude, I wish I still had the main account. Or was it the main account? I can't remember what account it was. Because like I posted essentially minute by minute updates of what was happening. And I'd love to just like look back at all of them. But like, you know, silly me not saving them anywhere. But yeah, it was one of those things where I remember when they breached the Capitol, because it was in like, it was essentially like this doorway on the side of the building that there's this mash, like this massive crush. And eventually like they got, the police got overpowered. Actually, do you remember that video of the riot cop that essentially got squished in the door?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. That was insane. But, yeah.
It was, so I know, yeah, when basically after, because they took the left side, that's the thing, is I just kind of followed the crowd wherever they were pushing me. And so I ended up on the right side. But if I was on the left side, I likely would have followed the crowd into the Capitol, which I'm kind of really grateful I didn't, even though it would have been like, you know, gotten better shots and all that. Like, I had no credentials back then. And this is, keep in mind, this is my first time ever on the ground. So I remember what you'll see in the video when things start getting more and more hectic and violent. I looked to this guy on my right, and he had press, he had, you know, full kit on, and he had a press patch on. And I said, "Hey man, are you a journalist?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm from the New York Times." And I was like, "Oh, well, I'm a journalist too, but I'm independent. I really don't want to get arrested." And he's like, "Just stay with me." And I was like, "All right, bet." And then I lost him in the crowd. But what happened was, is we got tear gassed in this hallway. Me and him did. And then I ended up climbing the scaffolding to try and get some shots. And then after that, I lost him. But yeah.
Dude, that's insane. Actually, I have a question for you, because I remember at certain points, the crowd started turning on the journalists and like smashing camera equipment and shit like that. At any point, were you like, you know, essentially harassed by the protesters, or did they just kind of like leave you alone the entire time?
Well, it was, I think, because of the way I was dressed and what I had on me, they didn't really pay much attention to me. They knew I was a journalist. I remember talking to some of the protesters I was around, that were around me. Because as bad as it sounds, there was like a moment where like we didn't look out for each other, but whenever, you know, pepper spray was coming, you know, they'd be like, "All right, cover your eyes, like it's coming," like whatever. So you started to talk to these people next to you, even though, you know, I don't agree with what they did at all. But they were really chill with me. And I think one of the main reasons for that is I had, the only gear I had on me was my camera. I mean, besides that, I had nothing identifying me as press. No, because all the other big name journalists had full kit. Most of them did. They had full like helmet, like whole nine yards. And so they still got like a sore thumb. And they, I've seen the videos of them getting pretty roughed up by the protesters. But yeah, I was kicking it with them. They didn't bother me too much, thankfully.
Well, that's good on your part. But yeah, let's continue the footage. Just
yeah, we haven't even gotten to the good part.
Oh man, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, so this is, the police start holding the line pretty, they form a pretty solid line right here. And then yeah, right here, riot police come in. And I remember this dude right here, was this huge, when we paused,
yeah,
right,
dude,
this
fucking massive
unit, bro. When he came over the thing, he came up from underneath the scaffolding. I was like, "Oh my gosh, bro, that kid is like Bane, dude.
Looks like Darth Vader."
No joke, bro. They had that man in like the catacombs of the Capitol, just feeding him steroids and like raw chicken, and like they brought him out for this.
Dude, his whole life amounted to this one moment where he'd be buff in front of everyone.
Bro, but like, listen, I'm just saying, me personally, like, it would feel pretty cool to call on the riot police and you suit up and then you pull up like that and you just like overlook the crowd and like, "I'm gonna hold this line."
Dude, he could, how many protesters do you think he could take on in a fight?
Bro, he's getting like three. He's getting three or four, for sure. But yeah,
I'm picturing like five. I can picture him picking up people and throwing them like in a WWE match.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Off the top, bro. But I want you to see this one. It's coming up. I'll show you right here. There's one clip where this absolute unit of a protester, I mean, this guy's a big boy, he grabs a riot shield off the cops, and then he like charges the line. It was insane.
How many thin blue? Oh, I can actually see a thin blue line flag right there. I was going to ask how many back the blue people did you see there?
Yeah, it was really interesting because like the political affiliations being displayed were kind of not all over the spectrum. Obviously, they were all pretty much Trump supporters, but you know, it wasn't just like the caricature Trump supporter that was there. So you going back to the question that you asked earlier about like, is this the main group? At this point, it's filled in a good bit and there's still people walking down. So there are pretty much no gaps. And I am at this point, like pretty much right at the front of it all. Yeah.
Now they're throwing shit.
Yeah. So this is when some clashes start happening in front of me and I run up in there to try and get some decent shots.
Would they let you cross the fence?
No, they wouldn't. Yeah, so God, I get damn, in there.
Dude, it's a fucking circus.
I get in there in a second, right up here, you'll see. Going in, baby.
Yeah, make a fucking hole. Get in there.
All right, now I want your thoughts on this, actually, right? So
yep.
I'll pause it in a second. I can point this out. All right, so wait until I get a good shot of him. There are... Okay, you'll see. Okay, right here. This dude right here with the helmet.
Yep.
Now this dude, he's suspect to me because I remember seeing him a good bit while I was there, and he always seemed to be on the side of the cops. Like he would do certain things, like, and there were a couple other guys I saw doing this as well. But all of them would either try and aid the cops in holding a line, or do something else in terms of like, you know, making sure the police were okay or whatever. But they all were like caricatures of what you would think a right-wing militia person would be. So I don't know if they were actually like, you know, if they were some type of federal agent there or who they were, but it just seems odd to me.
You got to think about it too. There are a lot of current and former police that were in those crowds. So I bet you it was definitely, you know, mixed emotions of what was going on. Cause like, you know, the standard, you know, kind of right-wing trope in America is, you know, back the blue and all this stuff and, you know, support our police. But then in instances like this, it's like you're directly fighting against police. And I think at that point, your morals and like kind of what you see as right and wrong kind of get blurred in the moment. And I bet you, you know, instances of people like this trying to like help out the cops is like, you know, them still, you know, kind of quote unquote backing the blue, even though they're, you know, fighting them. But it's so interesting because, you know, that was a big thing that got brought up is like, oh, back the blue, but you're fighting cops at the Capitol building. It's just one of those things that I think is absolutely crazy. But like I said, though, there were a lot of current and former police there. I know that like in a lot of like indictments following J6, there were a lot of cops involved, which is crazy in my mind. But you can keep it rolling, though. Yeah,
that's definitely a good point. I agree.
You just called nerds.
Right. Yeah, no. Okay,
oh, look at that guy.
No, this is what I'm talking about. So watch that big boy right there. Right? He just goes in there. He starts throwing some haymakers, bro. All right, here we go. Here we go.
Oh, my God, dude. Dude, I can't imagine. Oh, and that guy took a riot shield.
He's about to come back with it right here. Yeah, so right there, I got maced really bad. I got a lot of it in my face. And then
how'd it feel?
Oh, dude, it was a great sinus relief. Really cleared me out.
Dude, you stuck it out. You didn't leave. There we go. I know a lot of people, they get maced and they're one and done.
Nah, bro, we were, the adrenaline was pumping, bro. I said, this is my moment. I get to take these photos. All right, so it would kind of go, it was always in waves, like where, at least where I was, where there'd be clashes, the police would hold the line, and then, all right, now this is when the police line breaks right here.
You also got to think too, like when you look at crowd control tactics and just riots in general, a lot of it is, you know, building up and feeding off of responses. Cause it's like, you know, protesters will respond to police acting aggressive, and then they'll be more aggressive, and then the police will be more aggressive, and it eventually just builds up. So I'm wondering that, I wonder if this could have, like, you know, ultimately been avoided if like lines were just held and like, yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? If they kind of just like, you know, not try to ramp up things, because, you know, you see this a lot in protests in the United States. Like, there has to be escalation for de-escalation, but in this case, this is probably the worst fucking time to do it. but, you know, obviously, there were crowds that were, you know, being very aggressive, too, so you can't, you know, just say, like, the cops just sat there, nothing would have happened, but it's interesting crowd dynamics in protest settings.
Oh, yeah.
Because when I went to one of the riots in Boston during the George Floyd protests, and it was like a similar thing where there's this really like weird dynamic between the crowds and the police, where there's a lot of yelling, but then the second somebody stands up, it gets worse, sort of thing. So it makes you think, like, if, you know, if everybody just kind of like downplayed it a little bit, if it, you know, wouldn't be as bad as it is. But there's always one thing people always forget, and it has to do with a lot of things too, is that a lot of protests, a lot of riots and whatnot, usually the vast majority of those out are not, in an essence, causing trouble initially. There's always instigators that will kind of like, you know, light the flame for things to go bad. Like, because when you look at protests, especially like the George Floyd protest too, it's like when I was there, I would say like majority of the people that were out, yeah, like, you know, there's police lines, they're standing there yelling at them, you know, nothing really happens. But then you got the people who are there to, like, you know, cause trouble, and they're the ones that come, you know, dressed like clad in black and start, you know, breaking windows. And then there's, I actually break up, this is completely off topic, but this is completely separate from this incident, but like in protests in general, from my experience, there's like three groups. There's like the actual protesters, which may or may not get feisty depending, but like, you know, majority of them aren't. And then you got the instigators. So those are usually like, you know, the anarchist type vibe people, or, you know, the accelerationist types, where they're just there to cause trouble. They'll, like, you know, they're the ones that throw, like, you know, try to start and instigate the fighting and whatnot. And then you got the looters, who are just there to just take advantage of it all. And again, that's just from my personal experiences at riots. But, but in this case, it's like according to, like, you know, indictments and, you know, media reports following January 6th, there were like several key instigators that really, like, you know, led on stuff. And it, like, the microphone guy, I actually never even heard about the microphone guy. And, you know, I'd be curious to see who he actually was, because I'm sure there'll be at least something on him, you know, on the internet somewhere. But it's like one of those things where, you know, you get those like little voices that pop out that, you know, start directing people to do stuff. And like, you start to think like whether or not it would have actually happened if they actually, like, you know, kind of instigated it the way that they did. But, you know, it's one of those things where, like, you can only speculate, because what happened. It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah. I mean, but going off what you're saying, in terms of protester dynamics, I agree with you completely. What made this, interesting on January 6th is that, looking back on it, the way I see it is that, whereas with most protests that I've been to besides this one, you had, you know, a very small percentage of all the protesters who were kind of upping the ante and escalating things and getting violent, which, you know, they may or may not lead the crowd to kind of follow with them. But here it was like, I remember it was not the majority, but like essentially all the ones that were at the front were all hostile and going for it, 70-80% of it. So that was the big issue for me. I think the not for me, but for the police, is that they couldn't just pick out like, you know, four or five different people. It was like, you know, there was, a, you know, 40, 50 different people in front of them that were all of them at the same time up in the ante, getting things more violent. And then so it's like, you know, what do you do with that? It's very hard to de-escalate a situation like that, especially when you're as undermanned as, you know, the police force of the Capitol were on January 6th.
That's something that surprised me too, is like how like seemingly ill prepared they were, concerning all the warnings. Like we both said, there was talks on Parler about this for days beforehand, and you always got to prepare for the worst. Like, remember when people were like, oh, they're going to storm Area 51. It's like, you got to plan for them to actually do that. And in this case, like, you know, you have a lot of people genuinely talking about storming the Capitol. And I'm surprised that more resources weren't prepared for this event. It seemed like, honestly, like when I was looking at what was happening, it seemed like it caught everyone off guard. And for me, it was like I said, it was one of those things where it's like, you know, looking at the day, it could have been a nothing burger, but also it could have been something massive. But it's like, you always got to prepare for it being something massive.
Exactly. And that, I remember on the car ride home after me and my buddy kind of got done, you know, just kind of thinking about everything, we came to the realization, we're like, how do they not see that coming at all? How was there not some intelligence that was indicating to the intensity of what was going to happen? And then I mean, the poor DC or Capitol Police, I mean, they were just kind of left out to dry. I mean, there's nothing for them to do. I mean, that's what I'm saying, is like, that's why I remember there was this one cop who was on the riot line with me, and he was a young guy, probably like early to mid 20s, and it was before everything got really, really rowdy. And I looked at him and I said, hey man, I'm just letting you know, you can't see this, because I was standing on top of this little ledge so I could see over the crowd in both directions. And I said, man, you can't see this, but there's probably about 10,000 people coming down here right now, and this ain't even all of them. And I was like, and then I just felt bad for him, man. It's like, or for all of them, really. But like, they can't do anything in that situation, in my opinion. Like, there's not much you could do at all, because they're just up against such an overwhelming force.
And that's like, that leads into like the question of like, you know, why wasn't the National Guard involved? And I know there's a lot of like, you know, we can't just say, oh, why didn't they call the National Guard? There's so much politics involved with it. It's like, using military forces as crowd control is definitely a, you know, a big thing. And like I said before, and you can agree with this, like, nothing like this has ever really happened before in a setting like this, with the pretenses in the context of this. And it's one of those things where you gotta look at it, it's like, if they did bring in the military, get more involved, then like, you're like, all right, what's happening now? Like, what it's gonna make, you know, the people that were there, you know, in a sense, feel more marginalized than they already make themselves feel. And that's just, you know, it's a powder keg. And the last thing you want is for it, you know, descending into even more violence than what it was. But it is insane to see like how, the thing that always gets me is how many cops were there. It did not seem like a lot. Like, you would see more cops at like protests in cities and stuff like that. There was like seemingly like a zero police presence, other than like that, you know, that main line at the stairs and then some of the lines at the wings. But it seemed like there's no police presence when you consider the size of the crowds that were there.
Yeah, that, you know, it's one of those things that I still have questions about. And it just makes me, I'm very curious about it. And there hasn't, you know, from like the mainstream reporting, and also the other information that's come out about the whole thing, there hasn't, that's not really been brought up from what I've seen. What's usually focused on is, you know, how brave the Capitol Police were. And I'm not saying one way or another, but just from what I've seen, they've usually, the usual focus is that how brave the Capitol Police were, and not about, well, why were they in such a bad position in the first place?
Exactly. And they're like, I muted myself by accident. And yeah, and that's like a question that, you know, does remain. It's like, why were they so ill prepared the way that they were? And, you know, some people have brought speculation that, you know, there's a bit of insider planning to, you know, make it so that way they were ill prepared. But then there's also, like, you know, failure. There's just intelligence failures in general. It's accustomed to intelligence failures to the past from the United States. I see. It's just one of those things where you had all the time in the world to prepare for this. You had at least 2 weeks. And actually, you had since the fucking election, and just nothing was done about it. And, you know, you can argue if that was intentional or not, but it's just remarkable that literally nothing was essentially done besides putting up some fences and gates, and most of which, you know, the scaffolding was just from, you know, repairs. It's like, you know, that wasn't put up to block people. That was already there. Like, you know, the most that they did was put up some fucking fencing, and then all the fencing that was put up afterwards, it's like, you know, they don't need, this is already done. Like, you know, one thing that people, it makes people feel safer, but like, you know, like after a terrorist attack, you know, you'll see, that, like, you know, that specific place will start implementing, like, you know, soft, what are called, like, soft defenses. So, or passive defenses, like, you know, those giant concrete balls that's in front of buildings that look or those, the giant concrete flower pot things that you see in cities, like, those are passive protection measures. You know, largely it's just for, like, you know, make sure a car doesn't jump a curb, but there are, you know, counterterrorism purposes for it. Like, you don't throw those up, they'll, like, you know, set up some measure, but, like, you know, it's already been done. You know, usually lightning doesn't strike twice in a way. Yeah. So,
yeah. I mean, how long was the National Guard deployed in DC for? It was a pretty significant, it was like 2 months or something like that.
Oh, it was forever. I remember there were talks about it happening again. I forget what date.
Oh, it was on his inauguration. It would have been on the inauguration.
Oh, yeah, it would have been the inauguration. Yeah. Yeah, they were talking. And then that ended up being a nothing burger. That was actually, at that point, I'm like, man, this might turn into something again. But, you know, luckily it didn't. Because at that point, it would have been way worse. And, you know, people have to realize, like, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's like just escalation is not good in any sense.
No, totally agree. All right, let's see what else happens. All right, now at the top of these stairs, though, if I remember correctly, there was like a small group of cops, and they did shoot one tear gas canister down into this crowd I was in at one point.
Dude, those things can get nasty. I've seen pictures of people get hit in the face. It just goes right through their face. They get stuck in their fucking head.
Dude, yeah, exactly. It was getting hectic for sure.
Dude, you remember playing in jungle gyms when you were younger with the monkey bars and stuff? Like, do you remember when playgrounds used to look like this and now they're all, like, plastic and they look kind of stupid? But I remember when I was younger, like, you know, playgrounds used to literally just look like scaffolding.
Yeah.
In every recess, one kid would take a tumble off the top.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and they used to be so raw, and now it's very much kind of bubble wrapped.
But I also remember by this point, I think there were two, because this is before Ashley Babbitt was shot, and we'll get into that later. Yeah. But I think at this point, two people had died already due to heart attacks in the crowd. And I remember there was, one of them was misreported as a trampling death. But what happened was is that they had a heart attack and got stepped on a little bit after they collapsed. But one person... There might have been three, I can't remember, but I know there was at least two health-related incidents that resulted in death. That dude's enjoying a Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, right. Oh, dude, the lady taking the selfie cracked me up every time.
Gonna post it on Facebook. Dude, speaking of Facebook, the amount of people that got nabbed because of the shit that they posted on social media, it's absurd.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one guy, he got caught because his mom... This is kind of funny. I forget his name, but essentially he was with his mom at a hotel in DC. And I can't remember if his mom went there too, but he went there and he got involved. Like, he was, you know, videotaped fighting police, but he got caught because his mom posted a Facebook selfie with him the morning of this. And I remember that was one of the main reasons why he got caught, which is, I think, absolutely hilarious. But
yeah. I mean, that was the thing, man, is it, Well, that's another interesting aspect of it all is that, you know, a huge talking point on the weeks following and even now was, you know, you'd see like allusions to this being a huge organized thing by Trump supporters, that they were playing this out, and this was like, you know, they were really going to stop the election and all this stuff. And I'm not saying that that wasn't the case in certain instances with certain groups, if that's true, then it's pretty sad on the planning of the Trump supporters part, because bro, after they took the Capitol building, they just kind of stood around and then they just didn't know what to do. Like, you'll see in one of the clips coming up, they just sat there and it's like, okay, well, what do we do now? We just like took the Capitol building. Like, what do we do now?
Yeah, and at that point, there's nothing else to do. It's like you sent your message. I mean, I bet you some of them in their heads are like, oh my God, we did it. We're going to stop the election. But then it's like what are you going to do? I mean, obviously, you know, we can talk about this after is, you know, people are stealing shit. And one person in particular, obviously we have the podium guy. And then we have that lady that stole, computers from Pelosi's office and tried selling it to the GRU. And we'll get into that later. I want to talk about the ginormous intelligence threat that this event provided for, you know, America's foreign adversaries and whatnot. But yeah, we can continue with this. Is that George Bush, the firefighter?
Exactly, bro.
Oh yeah, guy from New York in a fucking hour. We got this guy.
This guy. I love him, bro. He's just like, my day is done. I can finally rest, like on some Thanos type vibes.
All right, so that's the end of your footage, and then we have a trailer for Andor now, because I guess you're getting it's Nile Red. I was gonna say, dude, you're getting ad revenue off of that, but no, it's Nile Red.
Oh, definitely.
Which is a great side note, and I guarantee you he doesn't know about the news page or the Nile Red's he does like science videos, complete off topic. I enjoy his videos, but that's just a side note because his ad popped up, which you won't see in the final cut of this, as we're playing it off of YouTube, but we'll have the actual visual files overlaid the audio. But anyways, regardless, so from your point of view, obviously we kind of saw the lead up, we saw the clashes at the front steps, which is insane. It was insane point of view, but obviously, like, you know, you could only see so far, like, but at this point I think we're just going to kind of talk about what happened afterwards. So after they breached, there was kind of two main events. You know, there's that one video of that cop where, you know, they're kind of piling up the staircase, and then he kind of clever, in my opinion, he decides to back down the wrong hallway to one of the chambers. So they thought that that was the way to go, which, you know, bought them a little bit of time. But just overarching Eagle point of view of what's happening. So they're breached. You start having protesters going into the different chambers. I forget whether it was the House or the Senate, but I think it was the Senate chamber. That's the one where the Viking dude was in there, and the other guy, and then the substitute teacher police officer asking them to behave. and also at this point too, you got people, you know, stealing shit, like I said, the guy that stole Pelosi's computer and whatnot. But then we got the other chamber where the shooting happened, and I remember the initial report of somebody being shot. And I, at that time, I didn't know whether or not, you know, it was from somebody in the crowd or a police officer or whatnot. And actually at the same time too, I'm like, holy shit, this is bad. You know, hopefully it doesn't escalate. But as we know now, like I said, I forget if it was the House or Senate chamber, but it was technically still in session. And what happened was, is that the crowds were at the door. They broke the window. They were told, you know, to get out and get back and whatnot. And then, Ashley Babbitt got kind of led through the opening, and as she was going through, she got shot in the throat, I think, and she quickly bled out on the ground. I remember seeing that footage; it was pretty gruesome.
When she, so I don't have the clip of it because I stop recording. Basically, after when you saw my footage, and after that point, I just kind of walked around. I just took it in for myself. But I remember walking, making almost like a full like circle around the Capitol building, and I walked around to the left side of the front, and there was two guys. They must have been like DC police, but they had rifles out, a full kit, and then there was an ambulance like right next to them, and I think those were like some of the first responders that, like, as far as I could tell, they were the ones that like were involved in like getting her body out or something like that.
Yeah, because I think they tried. I think there was a helicopter called for her, but I don't know if she got loaded in it or not. But she definitely died fairly quickly after she was shot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, but I remember because after she got shot, then like the fully kitted guys rushed up the stairs with the rifles and like, everybody get the fuck down and all this stuff.
Yeah, that was when the gloves came off. That was like when that first shot occurred, it was like, just from the videos I saw it from the inside, it was like right then it was gloves came off and then everybody kind of, you know,
got, yeah, things down. Died quickly after that. I feel like that was like the stop moment of everything. It didn't escalate any further past that point. And then it was also weird because from my point of view, as somebody looking at it from, you know, an open source perspective, it seemed like after that happened, it just ended. Like the building was cleared, people got out, and then that was it. It was very odd in a sense where, you know, she died and then, you know, it essentially just came to a full stop. And granted, that's probably, you know, what happened in reality is people are like, all right. But at the same time too, you have to realize it's like, not everybody knows what's going on. You know, not everybody's pasted to their phone knowing what's going on. And it's like a mixture of like, all right, they breached the Capitol, they're in all the rooms and all the stuff. Like, what do we do now? Like, you know, it's done. It's done. But the thing I want to move on to was the laptop lady.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually going to look up her name right now because I forget her name.
I've seen the photo of her mugshot. Is she also the same person who was wearing the Trump hat sitting in Pelosi's desk or at Pelosi's desk hitting a Riley dab pen?
William dab pen. Hold on. I'll see. I'm going to look up her name. J6. Hold on. Oh. Ah, fuck. Hold on. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right, because I just like clicked a bunch of random buttons. Hold on. J6 Riley Williams. Yeah, this is the girl with the black hair and the glasses. I don't know if she was hitting a dab pen, but there are plenty of pictures of her at the Capitol. But yeah, the big thing was is that she stole some computers from Pelosi, some laptops from Pelosi's office, and then she was she's going to try to sell them to like Russian intelligence, which is crazy in my opinion. But also it opens the door of like, you know, how easy it would be for like, you know, foreign intelligence services to just kind of like sneak their way into this crowd and just have full access to the fucking Capitol building. It's insane to think that, you know, they essentially had an open, and granted, like, we don't know if, you know, Russian or Chinese or, you know, whoever, you know, agents were involved, like not saying involved, but like, you know, they were there to take advantage of the opportunity. But, you know, if I was one, I'd be like, damn, I'm going there, because if they breach the Capitol, it's like, I can get my hands on whatever I wanted. And in this case, this lady got Pelosi's laptops. You know, granted, I'm very curious to see the protocol of like, oh shit, they're coming in. Like, what do we burn? What do we take with us? What do we destroy? What do we leave behind? And all that stuff. Cause you got to think, it's like, all right, what's important, what's not important. Cause like, these are like their offices. Like, these are the offices that they like work in every single day. Like, they have shit in there.
Right. Has there been any other talk of like intelligence coming, or intelligence that was stolen or leaked from this event, besides this lady who stole the laptop?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. Which is crazy. I'm actually surprised that there hasn't been. Yeah, I off of a simple Google search, I can't see anything.
But I have heard this talked about before, by some other dudes that do like an intelligence podcast, and they were discussing like they were looking at January 6th from the perspective of what does this mean for an intelligence leak? How easy would it be to just have a foreign operative hop into the crowd and then ransack somebody's office and get sensitive information and then kind of dip out?
Yeah, exactly. Like, if granted, looking at the United States, this is the perfect moment for foreign intelligence to exploit. It's definitely a massive rift in, our politics and society as a whole. It's definitely a, groundbreaking moment in American history. And, if I was, a hostile foreign actor, I would, take advantage of this situation, not only by, trying to access whatever I can from the Capitol building, but then also just capitalize on the event itself. It's like, listen, like, the way a lot of, psychological operations work and a lot of, influence operations work, it's meant to deepen the rifts in society. And, one country that's really good at it is Russia. But it's one of those things where you just keep, kind of prying open the cracks. And there is, evidence, through indictments and, official statements and whatnot of Russian intelligence being directly involved, with influence operations in the United States involving far left wing and far right wing groups. Like, that's their main objective, is that they're pulling at, the fringes of our society to widen the gaps. Like, one guy in particular recently, actually, his name was Alexander Ionov. He was indicted. He's in Russia, so it didn't really mean anything, but he was indicted over the summer for conducting influence operations on behalf of the Russian GRU or FSB, I can't remember, in the United States. And what he did is, there was a far left black nationalist movement, or like black nationalist, indigenous nationalist, I don't even know how to describe it, anarcho-communist type group called Black Hammer. And he was very close with the leader. I forget it. His name was like Ghazi Koto. I don't know how to pronounce it. But in the indictment, while not explicitly named, for those who kind of follow up on this stuff, it was kind of quite clear. But Black Hammer was in part of the indictment, and Ghazi Koto was actually arrested a few days before the indictment dropped, because he, like, him and his friends, or him and his cohorts, kidnapped somebody, and like, he kind of went off the rails. I think he might have got tipped off about the indictment and just kind of lost it. But that's that. But also, Alexander Ionov, he is also very friendly with secessionist movements in the United States, like the California secessionists and Texas secessionist movements. He actually invited them to Moscow during this weird summit a few years ago. But just roping it all up into one kind of thing is that Russian intelligence is very fond of, getting close with fringe groups. Like, there's evidence, and there's evidence that Russian intelligence flirts with Atom Waffen and, like, neo-Nazi groups, but then they also flirt with, far left groups as well. And it's just a SO division. And, granted, I'm only speaking about Russia. I'm not talking about other countries, because, every country is guilty of this. To carry out their foreign interests. But in regards to, like, a group like Russia, they play into the far left and far right pretty hard. And, January 6th was definitely a perfect moment for that as well. Especially
Yeah.
with, like, the events afterwards, all the social kind of upheaval online and in politics and media and whatnot. It was just like the perfect moment. So obviously, we don't know if Russia or China or any just foreign intelligence services. Foreign intelligence services were involved in the sense of that they were there to collect intelligence, but it'd be the perfect opportunity to.
Yeah. Now, I will say that speaking of the whole division in like American society, that I with the, when January 6th happened, right after everything was kind of all said and done, and me and my friend were walking back to the car, that's when I started getting really nervous, like really scared internally. That's why I actually had some serious fear. And
the reason for that is because I was like, this, because I was like, this is it, bro. Like, this is likely going to be the thing that kicks it all off. If there was ever type of, if there's any type of, like, when I say, now when I say civil war, I don't mean like in the sense of like, you know, North versus South, but there's, if there's ever any type of attempt at a civil war or revolution that would, you know, be violent, this would be like the thing that kicked it off. So that's what I remember going back to the car. I was just like, is this it? Is this the end of it? Like, cause I half expected there to just be like, you know, for some reason, just like firefights to break out in like the streets of DC on my way back to the car. But I mean, it didn't happen, but I mean, it was, that was all my mind. I did not feel safe until I got out of DC.
No, at that point, it's like, it's one of those things where after or while it was going on, it's like anything goes at this point. You know, a lot of people didn't think that it was able to happen, and it did. So what else that we didn't think was able to happen would happen? I think a grand majority of the people that were there would not want to see, you know, people, you know, shooting each other in the streets of DC that day. But, you know, like I said, and like we've talked about, there are the instigator elements that do, you know, the people that do want to see the government be overthrown and whatnot. But yeah, I was the same thing after, you know, when I put my phone down that day, I was like, shit, this may turn into something worse. Especially with the bomb thing, dude, the planted bombs at different buildings.
Mm-hmm. Those like are the RNC and the DNC, right?
Yeah, you know, and as you know, there's two sides that people say, you know, is false flagged by the government. Then it's also like, you know, there are, you know, instigators, there are accelerationists who just want to see shit go down for their own political agendas and whatnot. And it's just like, that's one of those perfect opportunities too, where it's like, if you are somebody that hates everyone and just wants to see the world burn, like, perfect opportunity. Like, you got essentially, you know, one half the country versus the other on one day. You can kick off shit.
Yeah. So do you see, like, in your opinion, do you see January 6th and the storming of the Capitol, do you see that being kind of the high watermark, that was the peak of division and, you know, I like division and like, you know, violence between citizens for political reasons, like for this era though? Or do you think that that's like kind of like a footnote, that's like kind of the roller coaster clicking up, going like, you know, clicking up on the roller coaster until you actually get to the very top?
I don't know, to be honest, because like looking at it and looking at what's happened since, there really hasn't been anything else that's been too crazy. I mean, you've had like a few, you know, protests here and there. I think there'll be two things. I think that if Donald Trump does get formally criminally charged and or found guilty, if that does happen, I think that'll be a major flashpoint. Second, I think that the next election is possibly setting the stage for this to happen again. But also at the same time too, January 6th was also the end all for a lot of people when it came to like, you know, kind of QAnon and like a lot of like the stop the steal mentalities. But however, you know, it's still grown, especially, you know, today. There's a lot of politicians that still play into that. What's her name? Carrie Lake from Arizona. She's one of them that plays into it a lot. And granted, you know, if this trend continues, it's just going to build up to, you know, a potential, you know, another happening. Because, you know, let's say it's the 2024 election. Let's say Trump runs again and he loses. You know, he could chalk it up to the election was stolen, and this could just kickstart this all off again. But this time they'll be even more pissed because like, oh, you know, happened twice, like fuck me sort of thing. But you never know. It's like one of those things. People ask me like in comment sections on posts, like, oh, like what do you think will happen? Or how do you see this playing out or whatnot? And it's like, I have no fucking clue. Cause it's one of those things where it's like anything can happen and it's not over until it's over. There's no end in sight that at least I can see about things getting any better. There's a saying, it gets worse before it gets worse, which is 100% true.
Yeah, I agree with you. I also think that in that moment, like during Trump's presidency, the right and like the right wing in America and also conspiracy theorists were, like, for the most part, very, very tightly glued together. They were very they're a lot more organized than they are today. I think that after January 6th and after Trump's presidency was actually done, I think that there was a shattering of these groups, and they kind of just went back to their own little enclaves. And so, like, you know, the question is, like, you know, will we see, like, another moment where they're brought together and they're kind of, like, all flying a single banner again in the future? But, you know, who knows?
Well, you got to think about it too. A lot was riding on the outcome of January 6th. I think for a lot of the, more fringe groups and, like, the QAnon people, they were essentially told that, like, you know, if today's the 6th, like, this is the culmination of everything we've been working for. And when it failed, it's one of those things where it's like, well, then what the fuck am I believing in? Sort of thing. Actually, I talked to a few people that were former QAnon people. They were QAnon people that then kind of, you know, got disillusioned and kind of took a step back and realized that they don't agree or believe in what they previously believed in. But it was one of those things where they told me that, like, you know, we are fed, you know, essentially, like, hey, like, you know, the insiders have our back, the president has our back, this will all turn out great, like, you know, this is the end all be all, we won sort of this thing. And then obviously nothing happened, and then they're like, well, fuck, like, what do we do now? Or, like, QAnon, though, just a side note, is one of those things where it's just very interesting. And for me personally, I thought QAnon was a foreign psyop for years, until that HBO documentary. Have you seen that? The HBO documentary about
QAnon? Yeah. That is a great documentary. Yeah.
Yeah. That guy, I forget his name. The son of the dude that created, not 8chan, the 4chan. 8kun,
4chan. Oh, yeah.
One of those messaging boards. But that was a great documentary or docuseries about it. But it was one of those things that was really interesting to listen to, because, like, the appeal of QAnon is that a lot of times it's so vague, you can apply it to anything, with these cryptic messages. A lot of people after January 6th, they kind of felt like they were betrayed, and then kind of jumped ship. However, still a very popular movement. It's actually growing in popularity abroad. You're seeing a lot of QAnon, I'd say, growth in Canada and in the UK. A lot of people subscribing to that ideology. I remember when QAnon popped up, I was in high school and I was like, what is this? And then eventually convinced people that JFK is still alive and will show up at, like, the Dallas airport or something. And I'm like, dude.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, man. But yeah, current state of American politics, what can you do?
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. January 6th was, like, it's one of those things where I remember exactly what I was doing that day. Like, I remember exactly how my morning went. It was just like, woke up kind of late that day, actually. And I was just kind of being a shit bag, and I made some coffee, and I was just hanging around my living room. And literally, I went to go post just about the Trump speech and the protests. And as I was typing it, they fucking breached the first like police line. I was like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was a interesting, very interesting day. It carried over, because I went to my girlfriend's house afterwards and I was posting about it all night.
Dude, that's the thing, is what I'm also very curious about is 10 years down the line, how will this event be viewed by history? Like, will it, like, you know, if you go forward, fast forward, like, 50, 60 years, will this, like, be something that's actually taught in schools about, like, American history, or will it just kind of be something that's kind of, you know, a historical footnote?
Yeah, that is crazy. Cause, like, when I was going through school, I felt like we had the same history textbook that was, like, you know, 10 years outdated, but it's like, again, apologies for my chair, but, it's just one of those things where I think it will definitely be talked about. How it will be framed, I have no idea. I think that will depend on the state. I think it will largely be by state. Because you see that nowadays too, like, you know, how people frame, especially, like, you know, internal U.S. politics varies by education system. But it'll definitely, I don't think it'll be pushed to the side. I think it'll definitely be the forefront. You know, I don't think there'll be like a January 6th class, but I definitely see it being like, you know, a chapter in a book that you have to take a test on. But at the same time too, it's like, you know, is this the worst thing that will happen in the near future sort of thing? Like, is, like you said, is this the top of the roller coaster? Is it still going up the chain sort of thing? But again, we'll just have to wait and see. So.
Yes, sir.
And you get all the news about what's going to happen if anything does happen from atlasnews.com.
Oh, we're doing shout outs now. All right. Yeah. So shameless plugs. And I guess this would also be a good time to wrap this up. How long have we been doing this for now?
We're running at about 70 minutes. So.
Damn. Yeah, this is a perfect timing. All right. So like always, we got the website, theatlasnews.com or theatlasnews.co. My apologies. We have the app in the App Store. You know, feel free to subscribe. You will get access. Actually, it's stupid because I always say subscribe if you want to listen to the podcast, but if they're listening to the podcast, I already subscribed. So if you're listening to this, thank you for subscribing to the podcast. You know, again, you can get your news on the website or the app or the Instagram. What I try to do is I'll post the too long didn't read on the Instagram and do more in depth on the website. And again, it's not just me. You'll get people like Chase, the Filthy American posting on there. You'll get Tesseron and Our Wars Today and Good Political and a bunch of other good mates that run pages similar to ours. And the team is ever growing because my goal is to be a platform for pages like ours to post without being fucked over by the grand overlord Mark Zuckerberg. But
hey-o.
In addition to that, you know, feel free to grab some merch too. We got t-shirts, we got stickers. Tesseron has a trout coin that, you know, it's the will this affect the trout population meme. But we, you know, we have a lot of more content coming along the way. I have no idea when this will be posted, but when you hear this, there is more documentaries, more podcasts in the work. And yeah, and actually Chase is working on a documentary right now. Do you want to like leak it kind of?
Which one? So I'm working on two different things. The smaller project is interviewed a guy who's in the like drag racing and drifting community in Kharkiv in Ukraine. So like they started doing like drag races and drifting around Kharkiv again and all this stuff. I think it's really interesting considering the war still going on.
Fucking awesome. That's like something that it's like one of those things where you're like, wow, that's like Vice News before they sucked level like topic.
Yeah, it was like that like the weird thing, like what's the weirdest thing you wouldn't think would be going on in an area where there's a lot of violence, and it's like that
drag racing.
Yeah. So I'm doing that, and then I'm taking all my footage from my time in Ukraine over the summer and putting it together and hopefully make a short little documentary that people can enjoy. So yeah.
All right. Is there anything else you want to say, Chase, before we wrap it up?
No, nothing much. Just hope everybody's doing well. And in terms of the, you know, if you're feeling down and out about the current state of American politics, it's not really much like, you know, happy things I can tell you other than like, don't take it too seriously, even though it's a pretty serious thing.
Fuck that. Stock up on food and water. no, I'm kidding. As
Move
far as
off
me,
the grid.
Yeah, dude, I got nothing else to add, so I'll just finish it up. I'm always bad at outros, but just thank you again, everybody, for listening again. I appreciate everyone that, you know, tunes into these. They're kind of a pain in the dick to make, but they're pretty fun to do when you're talking to people. But yeah, you know, moving forward, we're gonna have a lot more, trying to get it done weekly. That's the big thing. Trying to get more guests on. We already have some people in mind, various topics, various things to chat about. But yeah, thank you again for listening, and I'll see you guys next time.